This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for the Outdoorsman Radio Show with your host, Alan Ellis. Hey, good morning, everybody. Alan Ellis here on a pre-recorded show this fine Saturday on May 21st. 2 days ago, I had my 62nd birthday, and I happen to be in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina this morning. So the show's pre-recorded, but we have a very special guest this morning, and we won't be taking any phone calls. With us this morning is Bill Miles, who is a good friend and the advocate for the Maryland Hunting Coalition. Welcome, Bill.
Thanks, Alan. Glad to be here.
Yes, sir. So, Bill, let's get right to it. The Maryland Hunting Coalition is a organization that's just a little under 2 years old, grassroots organization supported by hunters around the state. But as our advocate, our lobbyist in Annapolis, which we are permitted to do by our tax status, we have faced some pretty stiff issues in the last couple of years in the General Assembly, 2015 and now 2016. But before we get into that, I'd like to just kind of ask you a little bit about your background, you know, how you where you went to school and how you got interested in the outdoors and, you know, what got you interested in working in Annapolis and the different roles you played there over the last few years.
Well, like most of us, Alan, that are really true hunters today, you know, we have to thank our fathers and our grandfathers for taking us out. And, of course, I grew up in St. Mary's County in the 50s when the water was beautiful and game was plentiful. And so my father and then my grandfathers, when I went out west, would taught me. And ever since then, I mean, once you're exposed to it at a young age, it has a way of staying with you for the rest of your life.
Sure. And I know you ply the waters of St. Mary's County. You like to fish. You got your boat down there, and you go out and troll for rockfish and just have a great time. You used to I don't know if you still do dive off Calvert Cliffs and do some exploring out there. And to me, that would be something I'd just probably love to do if I were a younger man.
Hey, listen, I really do pride myself as being an avid sportsman. And it's my wife still doesn't understand it, but that's okay because it's what my heart is and what I want to do and what I will do till I can't do it any longer.
Right. Well, not only fishing and diving, but I know you love the waterfowl. And you love to hunt ducks and geese. I know you make your annual treks to Oklahoma back to hunt with your brother. And sometimes you've been to Saskatchewan for, what, a dozen years or something like that?
I don't miss Saskatchewan. It's like it's the mecca for waterfowl hunters. But, you know, back on the bay, of course, I mean, the bay is absolutely beautiful. I mean, in terms of being able to go scuba diving in the winter for those prehistoric shark teeth along Calvert Cliffs, to being able to fish for the rockfish. And, I mean, it's all there.
Sure.
The bay is probably the most magnificent body of water in the world, in my opinion. And once you've exposed to it, like hunting and fishing, you're hooked.
Sure. Sure. Well, I know you like the ducks, the greenheads. I know you like the geese on the eastern shore.
I'm a waterfowl.
Yeah, I know it. I know
it.
We did a great sea duck hunt there out of the Potomac River earlier this year with great Captain Brian Elder, and we had a great shoot. I mean, Carol Sherrington was actually a guest on this show back in the fall, and we talked about game preparation. I'm anxious to hear what she was able to do with sea ducks.
It was a phenomenal hunt.
I mean,
a lot of people don't, you know, realize that's one aspect of hunting waterfowl in Maryland that goes unnoticed by a lot of people. But if you get an opportunity to go sea duck hunting, you got to give it a try. I know that we had a fantastic time, and I've done it a few times.
Sure.
But it wasn't near as fun as we had when you and I went out. It was spectacular.
And then most recently, we went with Tom Slavin, one of our sponsors at Upper Bay Gun Club, did a beautiful snow goose hunt for an afternoon. And, you know, you usually try to get out there in the morning, but the afternoon hunt was a different thing for me. And we had a great shoot on the snows,
yeah,
too.
Tom knows what he's doing, and I heard the advertisement, and I'd recommend him. I mean, he's first class and knows what he's doing.
Sure, exactly. So, all right. So, went to school in Kansas and Oklahoma. Came back to Maryland to
I got my bachelor's degree from College Park University.
All right.
I got my master's in finance and economics from the University of Oklahoma.
Okay, I got you. So, anyway, University of Oklahoma is sure proud of you because we are. That's for sure. And you came back to Maryland and. I don't know if you were looking for a job or got married first or got married and then went looking for a job.
Well, you know, I was born in Kansas.
Right.
And I had to go out to Kansas one time, and I was introduced to a the runner-up to Miss Oklahoma. And that that was kind of a hard fall for me. And sure enough, you know, we got hitched, but it didn't last too long. But so I stayed out there and finished my degree, came on home, and now I'm luckily married to Lisa from Bowie. But, you know, things happen in life. That's why I've got my degree from Oklahoma.
Miss Oklahoma. Runner-up.
Runner-up. Oh, yeah, yeah. She was a beauty now.
I believe she was. No question about it. So, all right. Well, so you came back to Maryland. You met Lisa. You got married. Now what are you doing? Where are you working? What are you doing? Where'd you start?
Well, when I did come back from Oklahoma with my master's degree at 25, I got a job with the Maryland General Assembly.
Okay.
And I stayed there for 17 years. And, you know, a lot of people don't know the terminology, but I was a committee staffer, which basically means you're counsel to the committee. And I spent 11 years between the Senate Finance Committee, the Senate Budget and Taxation Committee, and the House Appropriations Committee. Then shifted over and supervised the General Assembly's fiscal note system, and then spent the last 2 years in the Speaker's office, which basically means I was a top advisor to the House leadership. Then finally got away from government and got in the private sector where I am today.
Gotcha. But that background has certainly crafted your skill set for what you're doing now as a lobbyist, not only for the Maryland Hunting Coalition, but for other clients as well. And the fact that you worked inside the system and you know the intimacies of the system, how it works and how committees work and what the leadership roles are and how the crafting of legislation works and fiscal notes and policy notes. I mean, you've got a wealth of knowledge that the average bear doesn't have unless you're within that system, unless you're in that General Assembly system.
That's true, Alan. I mean, to be an effective lobbyist, and I know lobbyists today, you know, you hear them on national TV getting slammed all the time.
Right.
They make it sound like lobbyists control all lawmakers, which is really not the case.
No, we know that.
but I only really lobby in Annapolis, but if you don't have 20 years of experience and background working in Annapolis, say at the level I am, you know, you really are at a disadvantage because you really have to know the process to be able to do it. And they tell you, you know, I learn every day, but it takes at least 20 years, in my opinion, to be an effective lobbyist.
And you've been there that long at least. This was your 39th session, if I remember right?
Yeah, 2016, Alan. I'm sad to say, giving my age away here, but it was my 39th session. 17 of those was an analyst for the legislature, and the other 22 was a private sector lobbyist.
Wow. And you've had some good clients in the past, that's for sure. So, but now you're with us, as I express all the time, just glad to have you here because you are a sportsman and you understand. But, you know, we'll get into this in the next segment a little bit. We have a couple minutes here in this one to go. Since we're pre-recording, we're keeping our eyes on the clock, ladies and gentlemen. So, but you started out for sportsmen in 2002?
Correct.
For all sportsmen in Maryland.
Correct.
Fishermen and hunters under the old Legislative Sportsmen's Foundation.
Correct.
And great accomplishments for sportsmen throughout those years. And number one, in my opinion, was the repeal of the Sunday hunting prohibition in 2002. And then it was vetoed, though, in 2002, wasn't it, or 2003?
Exactly right. It was vetoed in 2002 by then-Governor Paris Glendening.
Right.
And then in 2003, we came back at it again.
Right.
With Bobby Ehrlich being governor, we got it through the General Assembly, and he signed it into law.
Okay. So 2002, I mean, the bill actually passed, but was vetoed
after
by the government.
After a 3 or 4 year effort before then, it failed. But in
And there were a lot of players that people in the hunting community would know. Some of the guys that talked about it and went to meetings and that type of thing, or a number of guys that just didn't know exactly how to get it done. And
more opponents than advocates.
Oh yeah, no question about that.
But
no
in 2003, we finally got it signed into law, and that repealed a prohibition dating back to 1723 when King George was on the throne of England. So that's how far that goes back. 1723.
Was Sunday hunting on Sunday was prohibited.
Yep.
All right, that's interesting. Well, you did have some opponents, and some of those same opponents are giving us heartburn even today.
Yeah, because, sometimes when you lose, it's hard to basically give up the ghost. And, there are groups out there that still oppose Sunday hunting, and they honestly feel, with the diminished number of hunters and the urban mindset in Annapolis, that the grounds are still fertile to repeal Sunday hunting. And they're there.
And let me make this perfectly clear. They are not going to give up on the total repeal of Sunday hunting. Even though we have the 2003 law, which affected 12 out of the 23 counties for just 2 days only, now we have an additional layering effect of a number of counties, 25 or 28 different laws that were passed. Some failed, including like Caroline County this past session, to expand Sunday hunting. And now all but I think it's three counties have Sunday hunting: Howard, Prince George's, and Baltimore County.
That's correct.
And it surprises me in Baltimore County, that holds the largest percentage of hunting license buyers. 10% of the entire state are Baltimore County residents that hold almost 8,500 hunting licenses and can't get Sunday hunting in our own county. Doesn't speak well necessarily for the engagement of the hunting community, but we'll get to that in just a minute. It's time for me to tell the folks about our friends at Papa John's Farm. If you enjoy gardening, I always recommend Schillinger's Papa John's Farm in Severn, just off I-97. Papa John's greenhouses are bursting with beautiful plants and flowers, annuals by the pack or flat, perennials by the pot, bedding plants, planters, and beautiful hanging baskets, too. Colorful pansies, impatiens, petunias, and all other beautiful flowering plants, and they even carry the proven winter specialty plants. Now, Papa John's Farm has all the vegetable plants, too, ready to plant in your home garden. Tasty tomatoes and squash and onions and watermelon, cantaloupe, 10 varieties of hot peppers, and even those herbs for your own cooking at home. Papa John's is located just off I-97 at exit 12, 8029 New Cut Road in Severn. You can drive right to the greenhouses to make your selections or call 410-969-5909. Please think about flowers and plants from Papa John's for your garden or even for your church. That number, 410-969-5909, Papa John's is open every single day. Visit Schillinger's Papa John's Farm. It'll grow on you. Now let me tell you about our friends at Clyde Sports Shop. Yes, indeed. They came through their sale, and they came through the big rockfish season, and now it's trolling season, it's chumming season, it's crabbing season, and Clyde Sport Shop is ready. They have all the bait you need for fishing, for any type of freshwater, saltwater, or tidal fishing. They have all the crabbing bait, the crabbing supplies, the crab traps, the trot lines, the baskets, the seasoning. You name it, Clyde Sport Shop has it for fishing. Rod and reel repair. They can take care of your missing tip on your spinning rod. They can replace those gears in your fishing reel if you want to. They can put fresh line on. All the services for fishing, all the lures, all the terminal tackle, and all the advice you need to go fishing or crabbing on Chesapeake Bay and beyond. That's Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne. They're just off Beltway exit number 9. Phone 242-6108. That's 242-6108. And don't forget that 24-hour fishing hotline, 247-3474, 247-FISH.
Sharing has never meant as much as it does now. We share the things we love most in life for the world to see. But what if we could actually do more with our sharing than just collect likes? What if this sharing could be used to make a difference? Now there's a place where we can put all that sharing to good use. The National MS Society, is asking people to make a difference and share what they love with someone else who loves it too. Whether it's surfing, dancing, or whatever is important to you, we've created a place that'll help you get your experience out to the world. If you have a story, share it. If you have a solution, share that too. Join us at wearestrongerthanms.org, because together, we are stronger.
The following message is about Medicaid and CHIP, free or low-cost health coverage for kids and teens. Enrollment is open year-round.
Hey, Voicely, give me the mic.
Okay.
Hey, DJ, let's switch up the music. That's better. So listen up, moms and dads out there. There are these programs called Medicaid and CHIP. They offer free or low-cost health coverage for kids. Things like doctor and dentist visits, prescriptions, and shots are covered. All the stuff that keeps kids like me healthy and in charge.
So, as you can tell, a covered kid is a confident kid. And it means confident parents, too. To learn more about affordable health coverage for your family, visit healthcare.gov or call 1-877-KIDS-NOW. That's 1-877-543-7669.
Yep, you could do something big for your family today because enrollment is open year-round.
This has been a message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
And Sophia.
In many parts of the world, childbirth is a great health risk. One woman dies every 90 seconds from complications of pregnancy and childbirth, and the risk hardly ends there. Nearly 17,000 children under the age of 5 will die today from largely preventable causes. That's over 700 children every hour. More than 11 children every minute of every day are dying. Project Hope is working to change all that, teaching expectant mothers proper prenatal care and making sure that they know how to keep their babies and young children healthy after they're born. From good nutrition to immunization against life-threatening illness, Project Hope is bringing hope to those who need it today and delivering hope for the future. You can make hope happen for vulnerable women and children suffering around the world. To volunteer or learn more about all the great work that Project Hope is doing, visit projecthope.org/makehopehappen.
If you're a guy turning 18, you need to register with the Selective Service System. It's the law, and we wanted to make absolutely sure you get the message, so we brought in someone we knew you'd pay attention to.
50 push-ups!
Hey, Coach.
Get on that computer! SSS.gov! Not fast enough! 50 jumping jacks!
It's for your own good, because not registering with Selective Service could cost you a shot at college loans and grants, federal jobs, job training, and in most states, it could even cost you a driver's license.
I'm talking to you! Run that hill! 50 hills!
Go to SSS.gov to register with Selective Service. 2 minutes and you're done. It's just something you have to do.
Pick up the pace! 50 ballet jumps over the alligator pit.
Register with Selective Service at SSS.gov within 30 days of turning 18. If you don't, the consequences could be ugly.
Don't you smirk at me! 50 belly flops into moving traffic.
Than proponents when it comes to the issue of Sunday hunting, and that's where we left off, I believe. 1723, and we reversed that in 2003. That's 280 years. Hey, when you get yeah, with me, the math, you know.
It's 10 years.
What's 10 years? What's a decade when it comes to... So, but we were talking about that we still have the same people opposing Sunday hunting and trying to repeal Sunday hunting, even as late as this last session. People don't know that the Maryland Horse Council, which opposed Sunday hunting from the very beginning and has every step of the way ever since, even with all the local bills, has actually tried to repeal Sunday hunting again in the 2016 session.
Yeah, they're stepping it up. I mean, they're just they're malcontents. They honestly feel that, you know, we pose a clear and present threat to their physical well-being every time they're on horseback while being out fox chasing or trail riding on Sundays during firearm season and archery season.
But there's never been any evidence of that.
There's never been any problem. There's
never been an issue. There's never been anyone injured in any way, shape, or form. I mean, that horse riders are probably one of the largest groups of most injured people that in a participation sport.
And it's not from hunters.
And it's not from hunters. They fall on their heads. The horse kicks them off. I mean, gear slips. I mean, there's something more urgent to worry about as far as their own safety is concerned than being struck by, you know, some projectile from a hunter. I mean, it's not happened here in Maryland.
Well, they claim that they're not anti-hunting. But yet, when they testify in Annapolis or when they roam the halls of Annapolis, you know, they don't actually portray hunting in quite the positive way that they would like for you to think.
If anybody has ever been in the room when they testify, you will see just exactly how pro-hunting they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And look at Annapolis, Alan. I know we'll probably talk about this later, but there's an urban mindset.
Sure.
Okay, and so you bring a group of educated people down there with what they believe is a noble cause, and they're persuasive in their arguments. And it's really up to really the Hunting Coalition and a handful of us that are the last line of defense that has to argue against them.
Right.
And it's not easy. It's an uphill challenge. And it's unfortunate that we can't work closer together. But
we tried that.
Yeah, we did.
We tried that.
But they're hell-bent. They're hell-bent. And I just don't think many hunters in Maryland really realize the fights that take place in Annapolis to safeguard their traditional rights to hunt and trap.
No, they don't have any clue. Exactly. No. But we did reveal in the current issue, the summer issue, which is making its way onto the streets right now and is actually online, of the Maryland Hunting Quarterly Magazine, you wrote an article called Defending Sunday Hunting, which outlined this whole thing about how it all came down and what happened in the General Assembly this session. I mean, they were opponents from the beginning. We're talking about the Maryland Horse Council, and we know they're listening. We know they monitor this show. So, you know, we're just going to say what we want to say anyway because, you know, they've come – I don't want to overstate this, but they've been – since with the advent of the Hunting Coalition, they've been a little bit stopped in their tracks to some degree. Not in the halls of Annapolis to some degree. I'm qualifying that just a little bit. I'm not hedging my bet, but in the last couple of years, they were proponents of the commercial sale of venison. In other words,
not a good thing.
With a farmer shoots a deer on a crop damage permit, when it hits the ground, it becomes his property, livestock, and then he goes and takes it to the open market. And the Horse Council was in favor of that. We're not in favor of that. They were the ones that promoted the 90-day slaughter season in two counties in southern Maryland, which the coalition was instrumental in having repealed.
Correct.
We have at times sat at the table with them. We have negotiated settlements with them in the room. But most recently, when their representation met with not only the Maryland Hunting Coalition, but the Wildlife Advisory Committee, the Maryland Horse Council, and the Maryland Bowhunter Society representative was there. Yes, the president, who's dual role as chairman of the Wildlife Advisory Committee, but I can't remember the name of the fox hunting organization. It's some fancy name, but
the Farm Bureau was.
And the Farm Bureau was also represented as well. And you know, we came together and said, "What can we do about Sunday hunting?" We didn't call the meeting. We were summoned to the meeting. Back and forth for nearly 2 hours, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
We settled on legislative lingo. We settled on...
So we thought.
Everybody seemed to shake hands and walk away from the table in agreement. The legislative language was crafted, sent to all the participants. We were given a week to review and respond. We did. Maryland Hunting Coalition responded first. Then with the Wildlife Advisory Committee and the Maryland Bowhunters, and the Farm Bureau also signed on to the agreement. And basically that would have meant Sunday hunting for everybody in Maryland, all season, all species.
And held harmless those that have existing Sunday hunting.
And everybody that has existing Sunday hunting would hold harmless. There was a couple little minor tweaks to the timing of the ending of the day. And it was livable. It was livable. And it would have provided opportunities for Maryland residents and hunters in Baltimore County and Howard County and Prince George's County to have opportunities to hunt on Sunday. Expanded hunting statewide across the board. And our deadline came and went, and we hadn't heard from the Horse Council, nor the Fox Chasers. And I'm not sure why we never heard from the Fox Chasers unless they are joined at the hip with the Horse Council.
Well, let's remember, we left the table with pretty much of an accord amongst the participants that day.
True.
We were all to come back a week or so later.
Right.
And report back to whether or not our respective parent organizations supported what we had developed and agreed upon.
Correct.
And we really heard from everybody at that meeting except the Horse Council. It's the Fox Chaser groups. I forget the name of it as well.
MOC, Maryland Association of Conservation something.
A strange name for fox hunters. Nonetheless, we really heard nothing back until midway through the legislative session when...
January.
It was closer to the end of February.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, they put the Senate Bill 1061.
Well, we heard that they didn't agree.
Yeah. Well, yes.
We heard that they didn't agree with the settlement, even though their representative was at the table and negotiating.
But we did not know that they were going to take their disagreement to a statutory bill being introduced, in which they did with Senate Bill 1061,
right,
which we were a little taken back by, as was DNR and others.
Sure. So the bill's introduced.
The bill's introduced. How detailed you want to get?
Look, it's public record. The chair of the House Environmental Matters Committee introduced the bill, Senate Bill 1061. We call it the 1030 bill because it ended all firearms and muzzleloader hunting on 1030, and it repealed every statute in place for every state. Every county in Maryland, it repealed all the Sunday hunting dates. It did exactly the opposite of what we negotiated to hold those harmless, and replaced it with allowing the Department of Natural Resources to establish those seasons.
That's correct. The regulatory authority.
Regulatory authority. Yeah.
And of course, you know, the committee the bill was referred to, the Senate Education, Health, and Environmental Affairs Committee, has really been very, very good to hunters.
Of course.
And, they really have been, despite the urban mindset on the committee. And we really didn't want to have to go down there and make another Bloody Sunday hunt debate before the General Assembly, which is what the effort was back in December with the accord we thought we would have reached amongst us to prevent that from ever happening again. But by not having them at the table at the finality, and they had 1061 got introduced, it got introduced so late in the session, by rule in the Senate, it was referred to the Senate Rules Committee, which is basically a mechanism to prevent bills from being sent to committees because of the late introduction date.
Right.
And the bill was sent to the Senate Rules Committee, and a week and a half, 2 weeks after it was sent there, a vote was held in the Senate Rules Committee, and it was defeated, meaning that the bill was never sent to the Senate floor for referral to that Senate Education, Health, and Environmental Affairs Committee.
Right. So, and there was no co-sponsor in the House. There was no House bill to accompany this bill. So it was a single sponsor, single bill with no backup in the House of Representatives, House of Delegates. And so it was voted down in the Rules Committee and never made it to the floor.
The bill died.
The bill died in the Rules Committee.
Right. That doesn't mean that we won't see it again.
Oh, we'll see it again. It'll be resurrected.
In
some shape or form. But keep in mind that the Maryland Horse Council is hell-bent on killing all the Sunday hunting in Maryland. Killing it. They don't care about bow hunters. They don't care about small game hunters. But if you hunt with a muzzleloader or a firearm, shotgun or rifle here in Maryland, That is the restriction that is that they want to have in place. Anybody that fires a rifle, a shotgun, or a muzzleloader on Sunday, very simple, you know, if you have a gun, they don't want you hunting on Sunday. And that's their main impetus.
And then the paradox here, Alan, is when they fox chase, that's a form of hunting.
I agree.
But by law, fox chasing on horseback is not defined as hunting. Therefore, by not being defined as hunting, there's no statutory requirement that they purchase hunting licenses.
Right.
So does any like-minded conservation-minded sportsman think that those individuals who chase foxes with a pack of hounds is not in itself in pursuit of wildlife that is a form of hunting? And
I think the word pursue is a big word when it comes to hunting.
And so why should they not have to be responsible for buying a license for hunting?
Well, I agree. Which also begs the question, why don't they have to take a hunter safety education course, buy a hunting license? They're chasing a fur bearer. Why not a fur taker's license? But here's where it gets muddy for me. If it's not hunting, why is the hunt master required to purchase a group fur bear fur taker's license for the group if it's not hunting? I mean, look, Bill, if you buy your hunting license, I buy my hunting license.
Yeah.
I got to pay $5 for a fur taker's license if I want to shoot a coyote. Okay, I happen to see a coyote during one day I'm out of field, or a fox, or another animal that might be in, another fur bear that might be in season. I've got to buy five. All of us have to buy a $5 fur taker's license for that to be legal. These folks are not hunting, but they're required to have a fur taker's license for the entire group. If it's not hunting, what's the point?
It speaks to their legislative clout.
It does speak to their legislative clout, doesn't
it? Right. So if anybody out there thinks, okay, you know, how difficult is it to be to stop the repeal of Sunday hunting, then you've answered the question.
Exactly. Exactly. So, all right, folks, we're going to take another break, and we will be right back after these messages. Hey, for great fishing tackle, crabbing supplies, and up-to-date fishing and crabbing information, I recommend Fishbones Bait and Tackle in Pasadena. To get there, take Route 100 to the end. Hop on Mountain Road towards Gibson Island. Go 2.5 miles to 4729 Mountain Road. All you need for any type of fishing, crabbing, and the best fishing report on the Mid-Bay. Fishbones also carries the best stainless steel crab steamers you'll ever find. Call 410-360-0573. That's 410-360-0573 for Fishbones Bait and Tackle in Pasadena. Time to book your dove hunt with Upper Bay Gun Club. Hunt over sunflowers on great farms loaded with doves. Dove hunt runs $150 per person and includes lunch. Hurry, the early dates are filling up fast and space is limited. Hunt deer, waterfowl, and turkeys on private farms with Upper Bay Gun Club. Choose a yearly membership like I did, or call about guided day hunts or even yearly leases. Tom Slavin has decades of experience and can answer all your questions. Call Tom at 443-309-3788 for the best hunting of your life. Call Tom at 443-309-3788 for Upper Bay Gun Club. Nothing is more frustrating than a dead battery. When your truck won't start or your boat or ATV leaves you stranded far from home, that's not good. The solution is Battery Warehouse. Not only does Battery Warehouse provide batteries for your car or truck, you can find marine batteries for cranking or trolling, ATV batteries, tractor batteries, motorcycle batteries, and batteries for all outdoors equipment. Did you know Battery Warehouse has batteries for wild game feeders, dog collars, cell phones, predator calls, and trail cameras? How about your video camera? Or if you tow your boat or trailer, your trailer brake control battery? Any battery you need. With 10 locations in Central Maryland, there's a Battery Warehouse convenient to you. Bel Air, Frederick, Cockeysville, Glen Burnie, Dundalk, Hagerstown, Westminster, Eldersburg, Parkville, and Woodlawn. Visit BatteryWarehouseMaryland.com online for the phone numbers and more information. When you need a hot flash, get to the Battery Warehouse near you. Hey, Alan Ellis here for Bay Linux at Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linux Spray-On Bedliners. You know, Linux Spray-On Bedliners are rated number one, and they carry a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linux Spray-On Bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. Your tools, your tackle, your crabbing and hunting gear can't hurt your truck bed. Choose the Linux Premium Bedliner that looks great and offers UV protection, or the Linux Extra with Kevlar and Paint Mac. You know what? Bay Linux and Catonsville Linux now offer truck gear, the toughest accessories for your truck. Step bars, tonneau covers, floor liners, grill guards, fender flares, and much more. These guys provide the best protection for your truck. Protect your investment, your pickup truck like I did, the Linux Bedliner, and truck gear accessories. Bay Linux of Glen Burnie is located at 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie, of course. Call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. Catonsville Linux, located 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. Call 410-455-0800. 410-455-0800.
W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg is taking care of my trucks for over 25 years. Anything from a simple oil change to extensive engine work, brakes, tune-ups, everything, their motto is, we do it. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles. Large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Look for the big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410, W&W Tire and Auto.
Sharing has never meant as much as it does now. We share the things we love most in life for the world to see. But what if we could actually do more with our sharing than just collect likes? What if this sharing could be used to make a difference? Now there's a place where we can put all that sharing to good use. The National MS Society is asking people to make a difference and share what they love with someone else who loves it too. Whether it's surfing, dancing, or whatever's important to you, we've created a place that'll help you get your experience out to the world. If you have a story, share it. If you have a solution, share that too. Join us at wearestrongerthanms.org, because together, we are stronger.
We will never fully understand what we've asked of our military service members, of their families, or their children, asking them to deploy, patrol, stay on watch, on point, asking them to put themselves in harm's way, to endure it all. But we do understand that it's our turn, our duty, to bring them all the way home, to keep them secure, to have their backs for the rest of their lives. Wounded Warrior Project long-term support programs do whatever it takes to help our most severely ill or injured veterans live independently at no cost for life, so that they might stand at ease. Find out how you can help at findwwp.org.
Back with Bill Miles. We were talking about Sunday hunting when we left, and you know, Bill, since 2003, I mentioned there have been 25, 28 bills attempting to bring additional Sunday hunting to the different jurisdictions. Pretty much been by local delegations bringing those bills, or a local senator or a local delegate trying to expand Sunday hunting opportunities. Explain how that system works a little bit, if you would.
Yes, Alan. Okay. In 2003, we finally were able to accomplish, like I said, for the first time since 1723, the lifting of Sunday hunting in Maryland, albeit for deer only and on private lands, for 2 days, 1 day archery, 1 day firearms.
I believe it was the first Sunday in November, and then the first Sunday of the deer firearm season right after Thanksgiving.
That's exactly right.
By the way, I killed a nice 9-point buck on that first Sunday, that November 4th of 2003. Decided it was time to go hunting on a Sunday, and I did. So just throwing that out there.
Might have been the only day that week you had a chance to go.
Could have been, yep. I'm a working man just like everybody else.
So in 2003, when the 2 days finally passed, the bill passed the House with no problem. Well, no, I wouldn't say any problem, but, I mean, it didn't run into the same opposition on the Senate floor that it did in the House, and that was something called senatorial courtesy. And what happened was the bill went to the Senate floor for all jurisdictions to have those 2 days. And one by one, senators from these various jurisdictions stood up and exempted their counties from those 2 days. So when the dust settled on the Senate floor on House Bill 679 of 2003, there were only 12 jurisdictions that allowed those 2 days. The anti-hunting community, which was vociferous, argued that this was just the camel's nose under the tent, and we were going to come back year after year and expand Sunday hunting. And really, having been the architect and the lead guy on it, you know, my argument was, no, we got the statewide Sunday hunting bill now. Future Sunday hunting should be left up to the local jurisdictions, those being the counties. If they want it, it's up to them. As far as I'm concerned, the statewide Sunday hunting bill has been addressed. Anybody else that wants it, they can figure it out for themselves with their own local citizenry. So since 2003, we have all now except 3 counties and, of course, Baltimore City.
Right.
And all those Sunday huntings, which have been basically an expanded Sunday hunting on private lands for deer and some turkey and a couple public lands in western Maryland, have all been passed by local laws, meaning the county itself came to the General Assembly after input at the local level and asked for their county to have expanded Sunday hunting, and the General Assembly consented. In the last couple of years, that's really been fought by the anti-Sunday hunting group again, and they then advanced that statewide Sunday hunting bill this past session for the first time since 2003. And so we can expect that this anti-Sunday hunting effort by certain groups to continue in 2017 and beyond.
I have no doubt. And, you know, that's where the Maryland Hunting Coalition kind of steps back a little bit. When it comes to a statewide Sunday hunting initiative, we're there. When it comes to local legislation, that's all for the local hunters to, you know, get the attention of their local lawmakers and say, tell them what they want.
Even if they want to repeal it.
Even if they want to repeal it. Exactly right.
If X County came to the General Assembly and said, we've had Sunday hunting for the last decade, we don't want it anymore.
Yeah.
The Hunting Coalition would say, hey, that's a local decision.
You know, you've got to understand where the Hunting Coalition comes from when it comes to its existence, its bylaws, its mission, and that type of thing. We're all in favor of sound wildlife management. We're not in favor of killing all the deer like the Maryland Farm Bureau wants us to do. We're not in favor of that. We're in favor of scientific wildlife management. We're not whack 'em and stack 'em, although we love to hunt deer. In some cases, I've heard from members who want to reduce the bag limits, who want to cut the number of bucks that are being killed in Maryland. And so, you know, you ask them, why do you want to do that? And they said, well, we're not seeing the deer that we're seeing before. And in, I think it was October 8th in 2014, right after we were founded, we went to a stakeholder meeting. Bill was there, I was there, and a number of organizations were there. And that was our first really coalition effort to let DNR where we stood on Sunday hunting. And we crafted a letter signed by 12 or 13 different organizations from across the state about Sunday hunting. And the final question of the day, I'll never forget it, was asked by Dan Baker, one of our advisors from Maryland Hunting Coalition, happens to be the president of the Maryland Fur Trappers Association, Incorporated. And Dan said to a deputy wildlife director, what is the deer population? Which way is it going, up or down? And we got the answer. It's coming down.
That's right.
And those numbers went from a high of about 350,000 deer a decade ago to right around 190,000 deer right now. We've we've wiped out nearly half of the deer herd in Maryland over that period of time through liberal bag limits, through increased deer management permits, crop damage permits, increased participation, and everything else.
It's a finite resource.
It is a finite resource. And everybody says, well, there's, you know, I see 50 deer in my field. Yeah, but you might see 50 deer in your field, but for the square mile around you, they might not see any. You know, so you might have something there that attracts those deer. So, you know, there's the deer are definitely in a state of decline here in Maryland. Is it scientific wildlife management? Yes, it very well could be. It could be that's where the sustainability of the herd might be. And here's what we're hearing from wildlife managers. And just briefly say this. We don't have a deer problem in urban Maryland where hunting is permitted. We only have a deer overpopulation problem in suburbia and the farms that surround suburbia, because there's no hunter access to those deer. There's no, you know, real reason. Look at the counties that don't have Sunday hunting. Prince George's, Baltimore, and Howard County, okay? Two, three pretty economically stable counties with a lot of development and little access.
And highly populated.
And highly populated counties, that's for sure. Those three counties don't have Sunday hunting. Whereas some areas in Frederick County, some areas in the Eastern Shore have abundant deer. Southern Maryland's another place that has abundant deer. But those deer populations are shrinking and shrinking and shrinking because of the reasons I mentioned earlier. So, you know, wildlife management scientific wildlife management is very important to the management of our deer, and that's why we tend to err on the side of caution when it comes to, you know, trying to wipe out all the deer with these ill thought out programs of a commercialization of the deer herd, you know, under deer management permits and things like that. So Sunday hunting is a recreational opportunity that participation in, as far as deer management is concerned, rivals deer management permits, rivals crop damage permits for the number of deer killed, and continues to be that very good tool for people to use to manage deer. And so what are we looking at in the future? We don't know, but we do know that the repeal on Sunday hunting is not going to go away, or the attempt to repeal Sunday hunting statewide, locally, whatever. And quite frankly, Bill, haven't some of those local bills been defeated by the opponents of Sunday hunting?
Yeah, as I mentioned, the last few years, some of the counties have come back and asked for expanded Sunday hunting.
Right.
And they were killed in the Senate.
Yeah, exactly.
Where the bill was introduced,
sure,
for the curtailment at 10:30 this past session. So yeah, I mean it's they're out there, they're real, and you know, in the court of public opinion, that's the great thing about it. You come down there and you make your case. The hunting community will continue to make its case, and we're hopeful at the end of the day that we will keep the existing system going. Counties wanting Sunday hunting should be able to come down and get what they want, be it repealed, be it expanded. But a statewide Sunday hunting bill, in my personal opinion, Alan, opens up old wounds that are only beginning to heal since 2003. And, again, it's such a controversial issue. If anybody was around in 2002 and then in 2003 and saw the tactics that the opponents to Sunday hunting actually used,
right,
and decorum really prevents me from going into a lot of detail here,
they were bloody pictures.
It was horrible. There were terrible videos. There were pictures. And what I'm saying is there's no need to have that fight again. Let the counties decide what they want and come forward.
And that goes back to what I've been preaching here for years. Locally, you need to get involved. You need to get to know who your senator is.
That's correct.
You get to know who your delegates are. You need to have face-to-face meetings with them. If you have 10 people in your hunting club, if you have 50 in your bow hunting club, whatever it might be, you need to become politically active at a grassroots level. The Hunting Coalition will do it on a state level, and we'll offer advice to anybody. We'll offer strategy sessions to anybody who asks. But if you want to expand it, in your county, in your jurisdiction, in your with your delegates and your senators through the local delegation, you're the ones that have to do it.
And the process is so simple.
It is simple.
I mean, people go, oh, politically involved, oh, that, you know, politics, oh, I want to stay away from that. But let's say, for example, you're a club in County X.
Right.
And there's something that you want hunting.
Right.
Okay. All you do is ask for a meeting with your local delegate or your local senator. Yep. Have lunch. Have a breakfast. Have an evening meeting. Go there. Explain to
invite them to the club.
Invite them to your club and whatever. But they're there. They actually really do want to hear more from their constituents than a lot of people give them credit for. So you go meet with them. Explain what you want. And then let's say, for example, they bite. They say, okay, not a bad idea. Then what they do is they then get the local governing body, which is either the county commissioners or the county council. They then have the issue before them, and they will hold a public hearing. That's how the game is played. Proponents and opponents meet at the county, at the local level, and discuss the issue. If at the end of the discussion, the local governing body says we're supportive, then the legislative delegation to Annapolis introduces the bill. And then that's the public opinion process starting all over. You know, people who out of nowhere can come talk. But for the most part, the local bills pass the General Assembly because they only impact a particular county.
I'll say this before we end this hour show. You've got to get involved. If you want to join the Maryland Hunting Coalition, there's no charge to join the Maryland Hunting Coalition. We're the ones that support the only organization that supports hunting in Annapolis, in the halls of Annapolis. Go to our webpage, mdhuntingcoalition.org. We're the last line of defense for all these things that we've talked about here in this hour with Bill Miles. Read Bill Miles' bio. Read what he's accomplished. We might talk a little bit about that for sportsmen over the past 15 years. And then you got to get involved with it. And if you don't, you get what you deserve. And don't bitch about it when it doesn't happen. Or if something happens that you don't like, don't bitch about that either. You got to register to vote. You got to go to your local delegations. You got to support those people financially who are speaking for you. That means a political contribution. That means a contribution to the Maryland Hunting Coalition. If that means, you know, getting behind your local club, hiring somebody to go talk to the delegation, that's what you got to do. We're out of time for this hour. We will see you after the break with more with Bill Miles and the Maryland Hunting Coalition.